Agrippina the Younger, if we are to believe the ancient historians, was an evil woman. The wife of one emperor, Claudius, and the mother of another, Nero, Agrippina allegedly schemed, killed, and slept her way to power. Power that no woman in Rome should even have desired. But is this assessment of Agrippina accurate or fair? Was Agrippina the monster we are told she was, or was she the victim of misogynist writers? With us today to examine this notorious Empress of Rome is Dr. Anthony A. Barrett, Professor of Classics at the University of British Columbia. Dr. Barrett is the author of Agrippina, Sex, Power, and Politics in the Early Empire. Welcome, Dr. Barrett.
Hello.
Who was Agrippina the Younger?
Agrippina was the great-granddaughter of the first Roman Emperor, Augustus, and the sister of the third Roman Emperor, Caligula. So that in a nutshell is her family background.
And how was she depicted in the ancient sources?
Well, the primary source for the Julio-Claudian period, the early emperors of Rome, is Tacitus. Tacitus was a man who belonged to the senatorial class, who had been ousted from power by the emperors, and so he was hostile towards the imperial system, and particularly hostile towards the imperial women, the wives and the sisters and the like, who interfered in what he considered already to be essentially an illegal system. So he had a natural bias against someone like Agrippina, and since Agrippina was a very forceful and ambitious woman, his hostility towards her was especially keen. This hostility, I have to say, though, is not limited to Tacitus. It's pretty well reflected in all of the ancient sources. The ancient histories, of course, the ones that have survived, were written by Roman men. They did not take kindly to the image of a woman holding power and influence in a very, very public fashion. In this way, Agrippina is in contrast with the first imperial wife, that's Livia, who exercised influence in the background. Agrippina did it very publicly and openly.
How did the ancient sources influence our modern interpretations of her?
Well, I think they influence us enormously. Although we like to feel that we're much more sophisticated in the way that we view women in politics, I think that we've still inherited the hostility of the ancient sources and inherited it both directly from them and indirectly, in that they were the inspiration for things like I, Claudius, which reflects this very, very negative image of people like Agrippina.
How did being a woman limit Agrippina's options in the world of politics?
Well, in the Roman world, a woman had all sorts of privileges that they didn't enjoy for many generations afterwards, through the Middle Ages, in many ways, not until the 20th century. But they were not allowed to hold public office. So Agrippina, despite her powerful imperial lineage, she was an aristocrat, she was wealthy, she was obviously energetic and very, very able, she could not run for office. So as a consequence, if she wanted to have power and influence, she had to do it by influencing the men in her entourage.
So she was using her various female roles to get power? Could one say that?
If we believe the ancient sources, you'd say that yes, she used her position as a woman. She used the ammunition that she could have as a woman to exercise power. We're told that she seduced Claudius, that Claudius was besotted by her, that Claudius was under her thumb. So this is the way the ancient sources would look at it. I don't see it that way myself. I see Claudius marrying Agrippina because she was a descendant of Augustus, which Claudius wasn't. Claudius was an outsider. He wasn't a direct descendant of Augustus and Julius Caesar. So Agrippina was a great asset to him, and I think that he used Agrippina as very much as a partner, as Augustus had done with Livia. The only difference is that that Agrippina made her partnership much more public. So I think that we have to divest ourselves of these the privileges that the ancients have. It's interesting that when women like Agrippina are described in the ancient sources, they're always described as beautiful, which we might think is a positive point. In fact, to the ancients, it wasn't. What they meant was that she was beautiful, therefore she could use her seductive charms for immoral ends.
Could one say that she stayed within her allotted spheres of daughter, sister, wife, mother, and yet still had political power?
Had Agrippina limited herself to the roles that you describe, mother, sister, wife, she could have had political power. In fact, she did have political power, but she could have continued to do that if she had been more careful about the way that she handled the public perception of this power. It does seem that that as sister of Caligula, she became involved in some sort of political conspiracy. We don't know the precise details, but it does seem that she conspired against Caligula. I think she was perhaps afraid that Caligula was going to be removed, as in fact that he was removed, but that this removal would bring down the whole imperial house, Agrippina with it. Under Claudius, she projected herself very, very much in the public arena. She appeared on coins. This was unheard of for the wife of an emperor to appear on official Roman coins. She did things like receiving foreign ambassadors, played roles of this sort that caused considerable offense. When her son Nero came to power, I think she went too far and tried to be essentially a co-regent with her son, and I think at that stage she had really stepped completely out of the bounds of being simply the mother of the emperor. She was the mother of the emperor and in a way sort of co-emperor.
You've already mentioned her marriage to the Emperor Claudius, and the image that instantly comes to mind when thinking of Agrippina and Claudius is her giving him the poisoned mushroom.
Yes.
But you argue that she actually had a very positive influence upon his reign. How?
Well, we've talked about the way the ancient sources influence our view of the women. They also do it with our view of the men. We think of Claudius, I think we think of Derek Jacobi, you know, as this rather kindly, avuncular, slightly bumbling sort of man with all the best wishes of everyone in his heart. Claudius wasn't like that. Claudius was a shrewd and quite ruthless politician who was almost certainly involved in the murder of the assassination of Caligula. When he took power, he initiated what was close to a bloodbath, and for the first 7 or 8 years of Claudius's reign, we have a series of executions, prominent people put to death. When Claudius marries Agrippina, the situation changes. Now, I can't prove a direct causal connection, but it's quite striking that from 48 onwards to the end of his life, Claudius really becomes a much more liberal, compromising kind of emperor. And so on that purely kind of statistical level, if we just look at the number of people who were punished, it is striking that there was a change after his marriage to Agrippina. When we look at the way that Agrippina got things done, it's very, very noticeable that she would do it by very, very careful preparation. She would win over individual members of the Senate, win them over to her side, and then they would present the case in the Senate. We find that in dealing with problems in Judea, that we find that there's a case where her advice is sought, and she intervenes and argues for a sort of reasonable, kind of balanced approach to the problem. So in all the instances where we have Agrippina interfering, we find that she's interfering with this indirect, conciliating, political way of doing things rather than just head-on confrontation, which had been the case before that. So I think in this sense, she was a restraining influence on Claudius.
You preface your book with a sort of rap sheet for Agrippina, listing her alleged lovers, her alleged victims. Did she really do all of that?
Well, it's very difficult to know what went on in Agrippina's private life. What we can say is that the ancient sources were very, very reluctant to give Agrippina credit for being energetic and able. So if she succeeded in influencing policy, if she succeeded in getting things done, how did she do this? Well, to the ancients, the explanation would be, well, she did this because she slept her way to the top. When she got to the top, she kept enemies at bay by murdering them. I think that we've got to be very, very cautious in accepting this kind of claim, in particular because, as I always tell my students, if we look at a modern trial that deals with the issue of poisoning, we see how difficult it is sometimes to prove a poisoning case, to prove that a person was poisoned, to prove that, that the accused person had administered the poison. Well, you think of the ancient world where there was no forensic medicine, no proper police force. All you had were hints and rumors. Very likely that a woman who would take on the role of looking after a sick husband or brother or the like, feeding them and the like, would get a reputation for being a poisoner if a large number of them died. And a large number did, but I think that's because they were eating food that was not properly preserved. The upper classes ate too much meat, and it was meat that they couldn't freeze, and meat that was doused in strong spices to cover the fact that it had gone rotten. So I think that a lot of these people died of food poisoning, and the women who'd looked after them got the blame for it. So I'd say treat these stories with great caution.
One thing that I think is for certain is that whether Agrippina did all the murders that were attributed to her, she was herself the victim of murder. How can you describe her death?
The death of Agrippina is, to me, one of the great mysteries of history. She, on her son's accession, she tried to control him. She failed, and Nero essentially banished her from public life. And she lived in sort of semi-exile. She lived out in her estates in Italy. And that went on for 5 years. And then, for some reason, after 5 years, Nero decided to murder her. And we don't really have an explanation for that. Now, it could be that she was maneuvering things in the background, that she had a lot of support in the imperial guard, that she was exploiting that support. We just don't know. So this is something of a mystery. And we're told there's a story that Nero invented a collapsing ship, which didn't quite work. I think I take this with a pinch of salt. But nevertheless, she escaped from this collapsing ship, swam to shore, and then Caligula dispatched assassins who clubbed and stabbed her to death. I really can't explain this. I think it might lie in deep psychological reasons. There are all sorts of stories about incest between Nero and Agrippina. Probably not true, but they do suggest someone who in his early years had been very, very close to his mother. We do know that that after her death, that Nero would hear voices from the hills and have these terrible dreams of being pursued by avenging furies. So I think that Nero had a lot of psychological problems related to his mother. And he even had a mistress who looked just like his mother. And I think it must have been a situation of intense sort of love-hate, that Nero was deeply attached psychologically to his mother and yet saw her as a political threat. And I think he may have agonized with that and then eventually decided that she had to be got rid of, that she was a political threat. But when he did that, he still found it very, very difficult to handle psychologically. I said, this is something we're never going to know for certain.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but thank you, Dr. Barrett.
Thank you.
We have been talking with Dr. Anthony Barrett, professor of classics at the University of British Columbia and author of Agrippina, Sex, Power, and Politics in the Early Empire.